Cohen, welcome to Radio Times. The Wall Street protests that began near the Financial District in New York have spread to other cities around the country. They focused attention on the jobless rate, the growing gap between the wealthy 1% and the rest of the country, and the relationship between powerful corporations and the government. They've also generated debate and discussion about the movement's message, its tactics, and influence. While there have been confrontations between police and demonstrators in some cities, it's been peaceful here in Philadelphia. There's a protest encampment on Dilworth Plaza on the grounds of City Hall. Well, we've asked two Wills to join us today in Radio Times to talk about the Occupy movement, its message, and its influence. Will Bunch is a senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, where he writes the Attitude blog. He's also a senior fellow at Media Matters, and he's the author of a new Amazon downloadable ebook. It's called October 1st, 2011, The Battle of the Brooklyn Bridge. And Will, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. And on the telephone is Will Marshall. He's the president and founder of the Progressive Policy Institute. He had a recent piece in the New Republic website titled How Occupy Wall Street Will Hurt Liberals. And Will Marshall, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty. My pleasure.
And nice to have you both here. And Will Marshall, let me begin with you, and I do want to get to your article. Do you credit the movement with any successes over the last 6 weeks?
Well, yes, I do. And I should first say that, you know, when you write an article for a magazine, they put the headline on, you don't. And I think that headline is, in some respects, misleading, because my piece is on, really argues against the idea that the Occupy movement's going to turn into a kind of liberal Tea Party. But on the positive side, I do think that the movements have helped to shift the national focus, the focus of the national debate, away from the kind of anti-government populism that the Tea Party has put front and center for the last 2 years, toward questions about not only declining opportunities for middle-class folks, but rising inequality. And, you know, that's a good thing, and one that potentially could help liberals get a new hearing with a lot of voters who look at the Republicans and see a party that is favors the rich.
And I want to pick up on some of that, but Will Bunch, let me get you in on the conversation as well. And I noticed a Time magazine poll finding that 54% of Americans have a positive view of the Occupy Wall Street movement. What does that tell us?
I think that tells us that there's a silent majority of people out there who feels like the real issues in this country have been ignored. I think Will is basically right in the sense that there's been a major achievement by this movement already, and that's changing the conversation. You know, I watch a lot of cable TV news, probably too much for my own good, but
I know the feeling.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. So, it's just palpable. It's amazing how the conversation in the mainstream media bubble has changed so much in 2 months between the debt and the long-term debt and this whole crisis that to what a lot of us think the real issues are, which are jobs. And especially, I mean, one thing that I think is fascinating is, and I've done several stories for the Philadelphia Daily News this year about the student debt crisis and you know, these for-profit colleges and these people with $120,000 in student debt. Nobody was talking about this, and I've heard quite a lot in the last 2 weeks about what are we going to do about this student debt crisis, which is a real problem in this country, and I think it's all because of Occupy Wall Street.
Well, interestingly, last week, President Obama outlined a plan to help students. Do you think that was as a result of this Occupy Wall Street protest?
Right. I mean, you can never prove a direct cause and effect, but you have to think so. I mean, he's doing this campaign now of things that he's trying to get done without Congress, without, you know, he's trying to pull a Truman and campaign against the do-nothing Congress, which I think is good politics. And so he hasn't just done student debt. As you also know, he's done something on mortgage foreclosures. And people, not just on the left, but I think a lot of people in the middle have been going nuts about the government not doing anything about this foreclosure crisis. And maybe Occupy Wall Street again is what it took.
Well, Marshall, did you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think that the administration was heading in this direction anyway. They really needed to move the debate past the debt question that dominated politics last summer, and toward the jobs crisis, which is really at the heart of the public's sense of pessimism and grievance. You know, it's the fact that The recovery is agonizingly slow. Unemployment remains high, and nobody seems to have a plausible plan for goosing it. And so I think the administration, first you have the jobs package that the president put on the table. Rather belatedly, he's come back to housing and in a way that I don't think is an adequate answer, and now tackled student loans. So I think that there's an effort to, you know, to offer small bites to various groups that are feeling the pain, and in a sense, this is aimed at re-energizing key elements of the winning Obama coalition of 2008.
Well, going back to you, Will Marshall, you made a reference to the Tea Party. Do you see parallels in any way between the Occupy Wall Street movement and the Tea Party? If memory serves me well, the Tea Party's original complaint was about the bailout of Wall Street.
That's right. I think I think the anger is the same. It arises from similar causes, but it manifests itself politically in very different ways. What I wrote, and the burden of my piece was really to say that there was a kind of moment of deep confusion among liberals after 2008, heading toward the 2010 election, where they figured that there was going to be a real populist uprising against the banks, against Wall Street, and instead the populist uprising seemed to have happened on the right. It was the Tea Party that came into being in a way that sort of dominated the 2010 election cycle, and I think that was disorienting to a lot of liberals who thought, wait a minute, didn't Wall Street plunge us into this crisis? Why is there a kind of anti-government movement arising? And I think there's a tendency early on in the Occupy movement to seize on, you know, the protest as signs of a kind of delayed fuse reaction to all that. Finally, there's a kind of a left-wing populism, a mourning. If for reasons I describe in my article, I don't really think that's going to happen. But it's, you know, for a lot of liberals, it seems to have restored some kind of balance to the political universe. But that's the point. You know, it's everybody's mad about what has happened in Wall Street, about the sluggish recovery, and about, unfortunately for President Obama, the fact that what he proposed in the last 2 years to fix the economy hasn't seemed to work. And so the public's anxious to hear something different, a new narrative about economic recovery and resurgence in this country. And I think that's going to be at the center of the 2012 election debate.
Well, let me turn to you, Will. You wrote a whole book about the Tea Party. Be curious about what you see, if there are some parallels.
Yeah, I did. I'm glad you asked that, because I'm fascinated by protest movements. And so I wrote a book called The Backlash about the Tea Party movement. And then I went straight into that with this e-book for Amazon about Occupy Wall Street. And I think you have to look at what causes people to ultimately take to the streets, especially in a country like America, which is a democracy. We have elections. And I think what plays into that is, you know, just utter frustration. And what you saw first is the right was utterly frustrated because they lost an election. Somebody that people on the far right thought was fundamentally un-American, and Barack Hussein Obama, as they call him, were so upset by this that they felt they just lost an election, and the only way they could show their displeasure, they couldn't vote again for another 2 years, so they took to the streets. Now, what happened on the left is fascinating. Is I think liberals, on the other hand, were briefly electrified by the election of Obama and a president who promised liberal policies, and after 2.5 years, those policies didn't really materialize for a lot of reasons. I mean, some of it is because of Republican obstructionism. Some of it, though, is because of choices Obama himself made in choosing this very conservative economic team and Timothy Geithner and people like that. And finally, I think liberals looked at some of the compromises Obama was making, especially in the end over the summer. I think the fuse was really lit over the summer. And I think the big backstory to all of this was the compromise with Republicans on the debt ceiling. And I think you finally had a sense among liberals, we put too much faith in Obama. You know, we went the electoral route. We elected a Democratic Congress for a while. It's not there anymore. But we elected a Democratic president, and we still didn't get the results we wanted. Taking to the streets is like the last, it's the last thing you have left. And I think that's what we saw here.
Well, and I'm looking at something from the New York Times. A professor of political science at Fordham University conducted a survey of Occupy Wall Street, finding that 60% of those surveyed said they had voted for Barack Obama in 2008, but about three quarters now disapproved of Mr. Obama's performance as president. Is that what you're talking about, Will?
Right. This is the core of Occupy Wall Street. People who you know, in some cases passionately, in some cases just in the process of voting, puts at least some faith in Obama to solve the country's problems. And the country's problems, from their perspective and from a lot of people's perspective, got worse. And how do we show our displeasure? And this is what resulted, I think.
And Will Marshall, if I can go back to you and even to some of the things that you wrote in your article, which is that you talked about the kind of the valid grievances that a lot of these protesters mm-hmm. have, but the utopian remedies that they offer.
Well, you know, I'm a baby boomer of a certain age, as I wrote in my piece, and you know, and I was marching in the streets in the early 70s, and you know, I'm not immune to some of the nostalgia that arises from these mm-hmm. Occupy protests, but it also brings home to me, you know, the risk involved in radical movements, and liberals really know how to handle them. You know, what's important here is to understand the creative and constructive interaction between liberalism and radicalism. I think in the 30s, you know, Franklin Roosevelt understood that and headed off populist demands for, you know, schemes that were not very plausible with positive legislation. He kind of co-opted some of the radical movements for change that the Depression brought into being. In the 60s, we didn't do as good a job of that, and, you know, I watched, as many others did, as the New Left sort of veered off the rails and helped crack the great liberal majority, the New Deal majority that was still in place, you know, by the late 60s, and then was displaced over the 70s and 80s by a new conservative majority in presidential politics. And in effect, a lot of my political career has been dedicated to trying to offset that rising conservative majority. So I think we just have to be careful. You know, in other words, there are valid grievances here. They need to be channeled constructively into positive political solutions. And the Democrats and liberals have to be a little wary about getting too closely of a movement, particularly if people get confused between means and ends. That is, if Democrats become endorsers of a kind of anti-capitalist themes that we hear coming from a lot of Occupy people, I don't think that's going to do them a lot of good. The question is whether this energy can be channeled into constructive, progressive reforms that right now aren't moving because the Tea Party Republicans in the mm-hmm. House have blocked things. And the venue for, you know, answering that question, of course, is the 2012 election.
Well, and do you have any quick comment you want to add to that, Will? We're almost up at a break here.
Right. Well, I think the record from the 60s is muddled. I mean, you're right, and it resulted in the election of Richard Nixon, you know, a law and order president. But I think also, I mean, when you look at the start of the 60s and civil rights, I mean, again, here's a case where the system wasn't responding. I mean, the Democrats were entrenched and conservative in the South. You had a Republican Party with Barry Goldwater that was turning to the right. And the only way to get the kind of landmark legislation we saw, the Civil Rights Act of 63, the Voting Rights Act of 65, was people taken to the streets, marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And I think we see a situation like that today, which is why I think we should, you know, look favorably towards the protesters.
We are checking in on Occupy Wall Street, and that's Will Bunch. He's a senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, also a senior fellow at Media Matters, author of a new Amazon ebook called October 1st, 2011, The Battle of the Brooklyn Bridge. Will Marshall is joining us by telephone, president and founder of the Progressive Policy Institute. Take a very short break, and then we'll get right back. Stay with us.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation helps make nonprofits stronger, offering workshops and services designed to increase effectiveness and build the capacity of organizations throughout southeastern Pennsylvania. The Philadelphia Foundation can help you support the organizations you care about today and forever while you receive tax deductions. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or online at philafound.org.
Picky eaters, hectic schedules, rising grocery prices. Many families struggle to make meals that fit their budgets, tastes, and lives, and are healthy to boot. I'm Mike and Scott. Join us for the next WHYY Parenting Seminar when we'll discuss healthy nutrition for kids and families. We'll also talk about cooking with children. Tuesday, November 8th at 6:30 here at WHYY. To register, visit whyy.org/member experience.
Thomas Jefferson University Hospital joins you in supporting WHYY. Jefferson Hospital for Neuroscience is dedicated to the care and treatment of patients with aneurysms, acute strokes, AVMs, and brain tumors. Employing the latest in non-invasive technologies, including endovascular coiling, interventional stroke therapies, gamma knife, and shaped beam surgery. To schedule an appointment or for information, 1-800-JEFF-NOW or jeffersonhospital.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Will Marshall and Will Bunch about the Occupy Wall Street movement. It began about 6 weeks ago, and it has spread across the country, raising a whole host of questions about the relationship between corporate America and our political system, certainly raising questions about the rate of unemployment in this country, and the CBO study of last week highlighting the fact that the 1% of very wealthy people in this country have done very well in the last couple of decades, not as well for the rest of the country. 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Will Bunch, let me go back to you. How do you see, and I'm thinking about the Tea Party and the Republican Party, but how do you see the Occupy Wall Street? If it does it have a relationship with the Democratic Party? Do you think the Democratic Party wants to ally itself? I hear the president choosing his words very carefully, as others have as well. What do you see there?
Right. I think it's great that they don't have any kind of direct relationship with the Democratic Party. I mean, I think their role is one of, I don't know if muse would be the right word, but just trying to call very broadly attention to what's wrong in the country. And just like you said in the lead-in about the wealth gap in this country is outrageous. And a lot of people, in policy circles, the kind of circles that people like Will Marshall and I travel in, have been talking about this for the last year or two. And it's great to see this as part of the larger national conversation, which it is, because when you look at the class war in this country, I think was started by the 1% and their allies in Congress in the changes they made in tax codes and things like that, that have so greatly benefited the wealthy and helped all the money flow to the top 1%. I think the role of the Occupy Wall Street is, to create this broad focus. I think it's up to the Democratic Party itself and maybe other structures that aren't part of Occupy Wall Street, to take the ball and run with it in terms of leadership, in terms of actual policy ideas for taxation, making college more affordable, making homes more affordable.
What do you think, Will Marshall?
Well, look. The root grievance here is very real. I mean, the CBO report, Congressional Budget Office report, is just astonishing.
Yes,
you know that the top 1% received 200. Their income rose by 275% over the last 20 years, actually 30 years, compared to about 35% for the median household. So there's been a tremendous skew here, which is complicated. We don't entirely understand the reasons for it, and it needs to be addressed, and the Democrats are the party to address it because they care. And the first thing we have to do is to persuade the public that, government can be an effective agent for restoring upward mobility and opportunity for everybody, for making the competitive system work for everybody. It's not going to be helpful, really, to sort of peddle fantasies of some sort of hyper-regulated economy that redistributes wealth from the rich to everybody else. I don't think there's anything like a public majority for that kind of politics in this country. And that points to a fundamental sort of asymmetry here, Marty. The Republicans have done an effective job, thanks to economic distress, of mobilizing a kind of anti-government populism, which is a constant in American politics, whereas anti-capitalist populism doesn't run very deep. Most Americans accept a free enterprise kind of approach. They're not anti-capitalist fundamentally. But they do want reform. They want changes. And so this is an opening for Democrats. If we can fuse this, the message coming from Occupy Wall Street with the anger and sense of really economic despair that millions of middle-class voters feel, and that's the key. You know, there's a middle-class populism that Democrats have to speak to here. To all of those white working-class voters and also these many young voters with college degrees that we see out in these parks, they're the folks that we need to speak to as we head into this next election and persuade them that this is a party that can deal with both problems, the underlying weakness of the economy and the maldistribution of its rewards.
And I do want to get to our callers, and we have just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. But, Will Bunch, let me go back to you. And, I mean, this is, in many ways, a decentralized movement.
Right.
And we do see signs about crony capitalism. Essentially, the capitalism is crony capitalism.
Well, I think a couple things in response to what Will Marshall said. I mean, one is no doubt there are some people in the crowd at Zuccotti Park and some of these other protests who are anti-capitalists. I've talked to them, so I know they exist. Are they a majority? I would argue that they are not a majority of the people. The majority of people want is fair capitalism where the deck isn't stacked. That's why there's so much talk about the unfairness of Wall Street felons not being prosecuted, for example, because it's just restoring a sense of fairness. It's not destroying the capitalist system. You're going to see strains within the movement, but I think that the other thing I just want to respond quickly to what Will Marshall said is he just kind of blithely says, "Well, the Democrats are the answer." Well, I think one of the reasons you see such anger is people have seen the Democrats out there raising millions upon millions of dollars from Wall Street. They've seen, a pro-Wall Street economic team put in by the Obama administration. And they're saying, are the Democrats really the answer if this is the way they act? How are they really that different from the Republicans on some of these policies? So I think what they're trying to do, and I think it's a great thing, is they're trying to put pressure on the Democratic Party to act differently.
Well, and just picking up on that, Will Marshall, those are the conditions that can create a third-party candidate or a third party.
Right. Well, I actually think the ground is pretty ripe for a third-party challenge this time because, disenchantment with government is massive. 9% of people approve of the job Congress is doing. Republicans are at the bottom of that list, but Democrats, frankly, aren't much better, much higher. You know, 11% of Americans say they trust the government to do the right thing. So you've got, a massive alienation from the governing system, from politics. And I agree with what Will Bunch just said. I wasn't trying to portray the Democrats mm-hmm. as hugely popular down there in Occupy Wall Street land. But in a sense, that's my point. There has to be an interaction between liberalism and radicalism that's constructive. Liberals have to co-opt a lot of the energy from these movements without endorsing some of their crazier ideas. Because who else is going to bring about these reforms? Some Democrats, have to be wary about getting in bed with sort of an anti-Obama left, if that's what's taking shape out there in these Occupy Wall Street protests. That's not going to help mobilize a strong counter to the Tea Party-infused Republicans who, after 2010, have been sort of dominating the national agenda.
And that's Will Marshall. He's the president and founder of the Progressive Policy Institute. He's joining us, obviously, by telephone. Will Bunch here with us in our Philadelphia studio. He's a senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, writes the Attitude blog, as we say here in Philadelphia. He's a senior fellow at Media Banners and has a new Amazon downloadable ebook. It's called October 1st, 2011, The Battle of the Brooklyn Bridge. We've got a full bank of calls here. Let me get some callers in on the conversation. We have, looks like Chris joining us from Doylestown. And Chris, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you. A long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great, thanks, Chris.
Mr. Marshall, thank you for your comments. I was just calling in regards to the fact that both my folks work in financial services. My mom's on the institutional side, and my dad's been a financial advisor for 30 years now with Wells Fargo. And I think a lot of the resentment that we have with the Occupy Wall Street has nothing to do with the fact that injustices have been dealt out to our nation, but just the fact that people like my folks and a lot of people who work in and around Wall Street are dealing and trading and doing business in these troubling times, and I just don't think that it's really publicized that a minority of upper-tier executives really orchestrated these toxic investment vehicles ultimately, and a lot of people who work on Wall Street or off Wall Street are dealing with the consequences of it as well. I mean, our 401ks have been crushed, and I think a lot of people in and around Wall Street would agree.
Well, Chris, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I'm going to give Will Marshall a first stab and then to you, Will Bunch. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the caller makes a good point. But what didn't happen after the Wall Street meltdown 2007-2008, you know, everybody panicked, including the political leaders in the country, and we were afraid that a massive meltdown of the financial system would plunge the United States into a depression-style economic crisis. So the premium was on keeping these banks from going under, trying to restore confidence in the markets. And, you know, that's not, in retrospect, that's not a right-wing or conservative thing. That's kind of an understandable thing. You're trying to, you know, prevent the cratering of your entire economy. But at the same time, the people who really did help trigger the crisis, who, as the caller points out, are not the majority of people who work in the financial sector, you know, kind of escaped the reckoning. And we bailed out the banks. They went back immediately to high profitability and back to their big bonus handing out ways. Meanwhile, millions of Americans are still underwater. 11 million people owe more on their houses than they're worth. They saw their savings sliced, and obviously a lot of folks have lost their jobs. So there is this sense of unfairness. It's real, and I think we, you know, there still hadn't been that kind of a moral accounting with some of the folks at the heights of the financial system, or reforms sufficient to make sure that there's a real change in the way the high-flying barons of capitalism act.
Well, yeah. I'm picking up on reforms, yeah, so just, Will, go ahead.
Just real quick, I want to agree with that. I mean, I think if the Obama administration had come in from day one with a more aggressive stance toward prosecution, for example, and if they had said, These are the bad actors in the financial sector, and these are the bad practices, and we're, you know, indicting the bad actors and we're ending the bad practices, then people like Chris's parents, who are good, decent people who work in the industry, would be protected. Instead, there's this kind of cloud of you know, uncertainty and anxiety over the entire financial sector because these practices have been allowed to continue. So I think that's problem number one. I think also I just want to make the point that a lot of the people in the Occupy Wall Street movement, there's this anxiety over the fact that America has become a country where our best product is these complicated financial instruments, and you know, that we don't actually make things, you know, like the Brooklyn Bridge that we made 125 years ago. That, you know, I mean, that instead we make you know, mortgage-backed securities and things like that. And I think there's a lot of anxiety with unemployment so high over that trend.
Well, just if I can toss something in here that I read, Thomas Friedman wrote over the weekend in the Times that Citigroup actually paid $285 million in fines because they had sold toxic mortgage backed securities and then had bet against them. So, and I mean, I'm a news item, I think, that was buried to some degree, but nonetheless doesn't exactly exonerate the system, but it shows at least someone is fighting the good
fight. So let's show who's good and who's bad. You know?
Okay. Let me get Rick from Newtown Square to join our conversation. Rick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, I guess my premise is that most speakers have it fundamentally misdiagnosed, that the frustration that's expressed by Wall Street is exactly the same frustration that's expressed by the Tea Party. And that is a manipulated economy that is forms a collusion between government, or really the elite, in the country, which is, you know, can be identified by the political elite and the Wall Street and union elites and et cetera. So what we're really asking for, I think, on both sides, is a government that's responsive to the people, that's non-manipulative, that's not engaged in trying to pick winners and losers, but to give everybody an equal opportunity to be successful and thrive in the economy. And I think the trying to credit Democrats with a more progressive policy or Republicans with resistance is a fundamental misdiagnosis of the sentiments.
Well, Rick, I appreciate the call. I'm going to toss that first to Will Bunch and then to Will Marshall.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because I think liberals do feel the government has manipulated the system already and picked who the winners or the losers are. I think the tax code changes that you see going back to the Reagan administration that favored the wealthy and resulted in seeing the gap between what a CEO makes and what an average worker makes going from 35 times to 400 or 500 times. You know, I think people feel the system's already been manipulated. So I think liberals A lot of it is, you know, just terminology in terms of how liberals and conservatives view these problems. I mean, I and what they view the role of government. But I do think liberals believe the government can help stimulate the economy and create jobs, whereas the Tea Party does not believe that.
So. Will Marsh, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, yeah, I think Rick makes a great point. This is a two-way manipulation, okay? It's the very wealthy folks in Wall Street and elsewhere have disproportionate political voice. They give a lot of money, and that makes a difference. And if any good comes out, if you want to see how, if you want to think about how this Occupy movement could do some good, you know, imagine these people marching in the streets to actually get campaign finance reform legislation or an amendment to the Constitution that would allow us to fundamentally change the way we finance congressional campaigns. That would make a difference. But, you know, it's also the case that government, you know, both parties colluded in the policies that led to the excesses on Wall Street and the, what everybody calls the financialization of the American economy. So that is true, and it in a sense is a cautionary tale. I mean, you have to be you have to be careful here. There's a in some ways government policies also contributed to, for example, the subprime mortgage mess where Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac really were encouraged to expand their mortgage portfolios in ways that were unwise and contributed to the problem. I don't think it was the main cause of it. So it's a complicated thing, which is why I sort of step back from the facile, you know, the 1% of control everything and the 99% of us are just and pure. Well, this is a democracy. We've all, in some ways, colluded in the problems that have been created, and it's going to take, you know, political action to undo these that works through the, you know, the two-party competition. And, you know, the agitation can be helpful in directing those parties, but we're going to have political action to undo these problems.
And we're almost out of time here for our first segment looking at Occupy Wall Street. To you, Will Bunch, do you think we're a liberal country?
I do. I think it's funny. I think when you poll voters on things like environmentalism, for example, on whether they feel that the wealthy are paying their fair share, generally you'll see 55, 60, even 65% taking what's considered, quote, the liberal position.
Not say that about themselves, though,
right? And we have a right wing media machine in this country that's done a very good job of energizing the middle class. Through vehicles like Fox News and right-wing talk radio, to support policies that are in some cases probably not in their interest, or if you ask them individually about the policies, they would actually support.
Will Marshall, what do you think? You're head of the Progressive Policy Institute, but do you think we're a liberal
country?
You've
asked a question that would require another 40 minutes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
To give even a partial answer, so I'll try not to go on. But look, the answer in conventional terms is no, not very liberal. Moderates usually the plurality in America. And for a long time now, though, conservatives have outnumbered liberals. Basically there are 150 conservatives for every 100 liberals. About 20% of Americans since the late 70s have identified as liberals. My argument is that a progressive coalition has to be a compound of liberals and moderates. That's precisely the majority that Barack Obama won and that Bill Clinton won before him. And that's another reason for Democrats and liberals to channel the anger of the Occupy movement rather than embrace their goals and aims, because, you know, we have to walk a balance here. We have to walk a line and put liberals and moderates together in order to create a governing majority.
Well, to be continued. Will Marshall, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure.
And Will Bunch, thank you very much as well.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
And we have Richard Negrin waiting in the wings. We'll be right back.
William Penn Charter School supports WHYY, a friend school for boys and girls, pre-K to 12. Penn Charter opens its doors to the community for an open house Tuesday, November 15th at 8:30 a.m. Details and educational philosophy are at penncharter.com.
The Geographical Society of Philadelphia supports WHYY and will host a week-long festival, the first annual GeoFest, featuring films, feasts, and discussions with explorers and travelers. GeoFest runs November 6th through 12th at various locations in Philadelphia and the Main Line. Guests include La Colombe's Todd Carmichael and endurance swimmer Diana Nyad. tickets, and information online at geographicalsociety.org or 610-649-5220.
This time of year, the scarier the better. Frightening movies and attractions, gory Halloween decorations. But what's really happening in our brains when we get scared? And why do some people find that pleasurable while others find it just plain scary? I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, The Lure of Scary Things. That's today at noon, right here on WHYY-FM.
Supporting WHYY, John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. Knight Foundation promotes informed and engaged communities and helps NPR advance journalism excellence in the digital age. More at knightfoundation.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Occupy Philadelphia has been encamped on Dilworth Plaza next to City Hall for about a month now. The relationship between the protesters, police, and the Nutter administration has been largely cooperative, but it is costing the city money. We've asked Richard Negrin to join us. He's Deputy Mayor of Administration and Coordination, Managing Director of the City of Philadelphia. And Rich Negrin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Pleasure to be here.
So how much has Occupy Philadelphia cost the City of Philadelphia?
Well, it's roughly just over $500,000 at this point.
And what has cost so much?
It's primarily police overtime. You know, when you have this type of a scenario where you have the possibility of unplanned marches and you have folks who are capable of blocking traffic and having any number of public safety issues in a large encampment like that, you really have to have a significant police presence to monitor the entire situation.
And how many police are at Occupy Philadelphia?
We don't release that number for a lot of public safety reasons. But we have enough police officers out there that we think, we ramped up at the beginning once you kind of figure out what it is. And then slowly over the last few weeks, we've been slowly rolling back some of those numbers.
And that $500,000, does that come out of the city budget, the police budget? Where does that money come from?
Yeah, it's pretty much all coming out of the general fund. It's police overtime, but it's dollars that were unaccounted for that we're going to have to figure out what to do with.
And do you know how many people are at Occupy Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers fluctuate every single day depending on what their events are. They've had a series of concerts. They've had a series of guest speakers. They had Angela Davis here on Saturday night, which was very interesting. The great civil rights
sure.
activists. When they have those events, their numbers are very large. They've been anywhere from several hundred to almost 1,000 folks. On your typical day during the week, they're somewhere around 200.
And when you say the Angela Davis event was interesting, what do you mean?
Well, you know, she spoke at the University of Pennsylvania, decided to do an impromptu march down Market Street, walked the 20 blocks to Occupy Philly, and really spoke there at the plaza. So as a result of the two events, the Occupy Philly being at City Hall and the group that was listening to her speak at Penn, they came together and was roughly 1,000 folks.
Wow.
Yeah.
How would you describe the city's relationship with Occupy Philadelphia, of course, knowing that it's a diverse group of people?
You know, I think it's, by and large, I think it's cautiously respectful. You know, I think we have some concerns on both sides, but I think the communication, the difference here in Philadelphia is that first, our leaders and Mayor Nutter specifically believes Philadelphia is different. As the birthplace of free speech, we hold those rights especially sacred here in Philadelphia. So we approach this a different way. We also had the opportunity to learn from some of the things that was happening in New York, things that we thought some of the things were effective, some of the things were not effective. So, you know, we really took it upon ourselves to have kind of some unprecedented communication with the Occupy folks, both early on. As the movement started, we had a meeting with some of their leaders and the mayor and myself and a few other leaders here in the city to talk about where we were going and what their plans were and where that was heading. And then again, this is very timely because last night we had another follow-up meeting over at the Friends Center where the mayor, myself, his chief of staff, Everett Gillison, Deputy Mayor Schwartz for Health, were all there with a group of about 30 to 40 Occupy committee members talking about some of the issues and where we're going forward.
And there is, I guess, a question that obviously is important to the city of Philadelphia, which is that there are some construction projects that have been on the table, so to speak, for some time now. First of all, what are those construction projects around Dilworth Plaza? What does that include?
Sure. There's a large, incredibly significant construction project that is going to turn Dilworth Plaza into something akin to Rockefeller Center in New York. You know, it's going to be some green space, which is great. There's going to be a tree canopy. It's going to level the many layers there to make it one level so that folks have easier handicap accessibility. And there's going to be a pond, a man-made pond in the middle that can be turned into a skating rink in the winter. So we think it's going to be just a fantastic green project, public space. But most importantly, it's going to create roughly 1,000 jobs for 2 years for the folks who are working on that project. So we're confident that the Occupy folks, we've been talking about it back, you know, with them back and forth, are going to do the right thing. I don't think this movement is about standing in the way of positive public projects. I think they'll come to the right result and decide that that's a worthwhile project.
What you're alluding to is the fact that once this project gets underway, they have to move.
That's exactly right. We'd like them to consider the project something worthwhile. I think their movement's about economic justice. I think a project like this is actually a very positive thing and something they should support. So I don't think that puts us at loggerheads, and you know, I think it's something we should be able to work out.
I'm looking at something that was in the Inquirer over the weekend, but Occupy Philadelphia's Facebook page, and I'm quoting here, says only that the group has agreed to talk to the city about moving, not that it's agreed to move. And I don't necessarily want to negotiate this on the air with you. But nonetheless, this sounds like a critical decision that has to be made on both sides.
Well, I think it's going to be a critical decision on their part. I mean, I think they have, you know, we respect their process. You know, they have these interesting meetings. I don't know how much you know about how they make decisions. But they have a general assembly every single night where they present questions and in true democratic fashion vote on what they're going to do. So I would be hopeful, and I know that we would like them to present the question of moving peacefully and, you know, not standing in the way of a very positive project. I think that'll go through their process, and I'm optimistic that it'll be successful.
And that's Richard Negrin. He's Deputy Mayor of Philadelphia. We are talking about Occupy Philadelphia, which has been encamped on Dilworth Plaza. That's right next to City Hall for about a month now. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. This was a snowy and rainy and wet weekend. What was the impact, I guess, on those camped out next to City Hall?
Well, you know, that's one of the things we're worried about. When we go to Code Blue here in Philadelphia, and as you know, Code Blue is when it drops well below freezing temperatures, and it's really kind of life-threatening to be out there. This weekend was not Code Blue, but it was incredibly cold. Mm-hmm. That's a harsh winter in Philadelphia to be outside, and that's one of the things that we're talking about on a weekly basis is what are their options? What are they going to do? What can we do to help provide some shelter for some of the homeless that are there in a way that does not endanger lives?
Health concerns, just that people are going to be cold or they could get ill.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's a significant group of folks, living close together in harsh environments. Many of the folks there, many of the homeless, have medical conditions already, so you're concerned about them. They fall within that category of vulnerable populations. So whenever you have harsh weather conditions, those folks are specifically, an increased risk.
Do you know how many homeless people are part of this encampment?
I'd say roughly a third to half of the folks on any given day are folks, you know, they've embraced the homeless. The homeless have joined their movement. They're being provided meals. If you provide meals and tents and places for them to go to the bathroom, they have several porta potties. The homeless are going to, it is going to attract the homeless.
Mayor Nutter was scheduled to meet with actually former President Clinton on Saturday. I believe it was at Temple University. It was canceled, and there were some protesters there. And again, according to the papers, some of the members, or I guess leaders of this protest movement, believe that it was canceled because the protesters were going to be in the audience. Is there any truth to that?
No, absolutely not. And a couple things. That was a campaign event, not really a city-sponsored event. But it was canceled primarily because President Clinton's plane couldn't come and land in the snow. I think the mayor's campaign made a decision not to have hundreds of people standing outside in the cold, which is probably a wise decision.
Let me get a couple of callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We are talking about Occupy Philadelphia. And Rich Negrin is our guest, Deputy Mayor of the City of Philadelphia. And let's see what CA from Center City has to say. CA, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've been down at Occupy Philly, and one of the General Assemblies, a letter was drafted asking that the city not spend $50 million on an ice skating rink, considering that we have 25% of the population living below the poverty line and a great deal of homelessness, and the money could be spent in better ways. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for calling into Radio Times. Rich Negrin, your response.
Really great and an important point. The city is not spending one dime on Dilworth Plaza. This is a project being sponsored by the Center City District and funded with Federal Recovery Act funds and other grant money. So it's not like we have the ability to divert those funds to homeless or education. As you know, we fought to raise taxes, you know, begrudgingly this year for education. We care deeply about education. We care deeply about homeless and has done more for homelessness this administration than any previous to that. So the city's not spending one dime. This is an important project, and it's not just a skating rink. It is a green project with green space, and it's going to be fantastic.
Let me get to Stephen from, looks like, Fairmount to join our conversation. And Stephen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, Mr. Negrin. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic.
The crowd down there on Dilworth Plaza, they're not displaying the democratic process at all. What they're doing is infringing, actually, upon a vast majority of Philadelphians' rights. They're taking up a public space lawlessly, and you support them, as usual. You just mentioned money. I mean, this city doesn't have any money. You talk about money for public schools. This city already spends more money per child.
Well, Stephen,
private schools do.
Stephen, hold on. I don't want to get too off tangent here. Let's keep the focus on Occupy Philadelphia, if you don't mind.
Well, Occupy Philadelphia, if this great, unwashed, small number rabble want to have their views put forth, then go find a candidate that supports what they believe, and let's see if he can win an election.
Okay, fair enough. Rich Negrin, I think his point is, and it's not a bad point, which is that this is a public space. I've been down there to Occupy Philadelphia, and do all the public have access to this space?
Well, they have not infringed on other people's rights to enter the space. In fact, there are folks in the space that don't necessarily support or agree with the Occupy movement. I know there's a gentleman in a Ron Paul tent who's walking around with a firearm. I think the Occupy folks would rather not have that person there, but they've been very welcoming to other perspectives and other views. To address whether they're there illegally or not, one of the important steps in our initial relationship, because it was important for us that this be lawful and peaceful and that we be able to have some guidelines and rules and regulations with their encampment, was to get them to sign a permit. So they did vote and sign on a permit. So they're not there illegally. They have the permission of the city to be there. We hold them accountable to things like making sure there's no graffiti and trying to keep things as clean as possible under those conditions on the basis and the strength of that permit. So, you know, they have a right to be there, for the near future.
Is someone allowed to walk around City Hall with a firearm?
Somebody who has a lawful permit to carry has a right to walk around with a firearm. I know it's unusual, and especially in an urban setting, but that is absolutely the law of the state of Pennsylvania.
If this encampment is there, let me ask you another question. Where do you want them to move once this construction project starts?
You know, I think that's going to be part of our conversation back and forth. I think they're looking for a place where they are visible, where they have access to people and they're seen, and where they have some access to power. So we're discussing a number of different options. I think one of the ones that has been talked about the most is right here at the Municipal Services Building where I am on what we call Thomas Paine Plaza, which is directly across the street from where they are.
But can you imagine a permanent encampment in Center City, Philadelphia in the next year or so?
Yeah, I think that gets rather thorny. I think any kind of a permanent encampment or I know some folks have talked about permanent structures like teepees and biodomes and things of that nature. You know, I think that's something that's unprecedented and certainly has never been done before, and I think I would have some concerns with that.
Has that been something that has been discussed?
No, you know, some of the folks on the Occupy side have mentioned that. Some of the folks who are looking for to be there in a sustainable community type setting. But you know, I think there's some options for folks who want to do things like that. I think there's other places. I think the movement could raise money and purchase land and vacant lots, and you know, I think that can be a broader conversation.
What do you think? What do you take away as a message of Occupy Philadelphia? What are they trying to say?
You know, I think they're still kind of figuring that out. I think one of the interesting things here is what really began about economic justice is really around similar to what the Tea Party did last year. You know, I think the last caller, Stephen, was right. I think this movement's going to have to, over time, figure out where they're going to focus their energies and start to figure out how they can really make true and lasting change around those key issues. I think if it's around poverty, if it's around homelessness, if it's around economic justice and more jobs and opportunities, that's something that we support as a city. You know, that's something that, you know, we believe that's a righteous cause and something. We don't want Philadelphia to have one of the highest poverty rates in the country. We want Philadelphia to be, you know, the mayor says this all the time, the next great international destination city. And a lot of the things you see us doing are moving us in that direction. We just received number one city in the country for cultural and the arts, by Travel and Leisure magazine last week. So that's heading in the right direction. And so we believe and are, you know, kindred spirits with them if those are their issues. If their issues are other things that are less about, you know, improving the city, you know, I think that'll be a question for us.
Well, on that note, Richard Negrin, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Deputy Mayor of Administration and Coordination and Managing Director of the City of Philadelphia, talking about Occupy Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times.